Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. My name is Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. Today's episode, we're going to talk about the Herons taking on Continental Soccer. We're going to talk about DeAndre Yedlin. We're going to talk about Jean Mota. We're going to talk about Matias Rojas. But before all that, how are you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling great. The Herons embark on their North American adventure. There's going to be a good, fun set of games coming up back-to-back, so a lot to look forward to.
Yes, but before we get into this Nashville preview, we've had some roster moves since our last podcast. Let's start with DeAndre Yedlin. We did talk about him on our last podcast for about 20 minutes, but it was about an hour after the news broke. We weren't sure what the ramifications were going to be. We didn't know if they were going to bring in another right back. There were some names floated around, Franco Escobar being the main one. Now that we know that there's no replacement, at least for this game, how do you feel about that move?
Honestly, not great at this point in time. I think the right back position is a little bit, not even a little bit, it's quite empty right now. We've got Boothright is the only slot, but is the only player that slots straight into that position. So I'm a little bit confused as to what the thinking behind that particular move was. Obviously, we wanted to free up a bit of the finances, gives us a little bit of more room in terms of GAM as well. But we lost a big leader in that locker room. DeAndre Yedlin always gave his best in terms of physicality, in terms of running, and you knew what you were expecting from him every game. And that's the least you can expect of any player. So I think it's a big loss going forward, but I think it's one of those things where now you can see the team shape up in Tata Martino's image. And DeAndre Yedlin was another one of the players who was from the pre-Messi era. So good luck to him. It's going to be a big loss, but hopefully Chris Henderson and Tata Martino have somebody in mind and we replace that position very soon, because it's going to be a long season if we play without a starting right back.
Yeah, Tata had an interview with the press today ahead of tomorrow night's game, and he mentioned that they don't have an obvious solution at right back. He mentioned Ian Frey could play there once he gets back healthy, which I do believe, but he didn't mention Julian Gressel as an obvious option to replace Yedlin at right back, which I think a lot of people thought was the easy answer to just slide him over. But that doesn't seem like what we're going to get tomorrow night or even over the next couple of weeks. And I agree, you know, big loss in the locker room, big loss for Inter Miami's stability, but I guess the club is used to turning over and, you know, half the roster every single season. So they'll move on and they'll make it work, I'm sure. We'll talk about how we think the team's going to line up in this Nashville game later on in the episode. And maybe that's sort of how we think the team might line up moving forward. Or do you think maybe tomorrow night's game is a exception based on what they have available right now?
No, I think obviously we're going to get into this, but if Alba is questionable, that puts a bit of a dent on what I was thinking the starting lineup would be. But in terms of tomorrow's game, I would have expected that to be a precursor to how we would play in the post-Yedlin era. I think that would be a big sign of what Tata is looking at in terms of the formation without a out-and-out right back. And unfortunately, that might signal the return of the 3-5-2. And I know we've had a bit of a conversation about that, especially in the preseason as well. So it'll be interesting to see what he's looking at. And more than anything, with the way the team was shaping up in the first couple of games, I think we are finally starting to settle down and look like a cohesive unit. And it seemed like all the pieces were clicking together. So to change that dynamic so early in the season without actually having a replacement option in mind is a little bit of a gamble, and it risks messing up that team dynamic that we've been building over the last few games. So we'll find out. We'll find out how it goes.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is, well, I like DeAndre Yedlin as a player. Him leaving and not having an obvious answer to step into that role kind of means you have to change the entire layout of your team. And that makes me nervous going into a couple big games here against Nashville over the next week. Let's talk about Jean Mota. We got the news on Tuesday that he is going back to Brazil. He's going to sign with Vitória. Inter Miami is going to get about $350,000 back, although that doesn't really affect the team. That doesn't really affect the roster. What do you think about Mota leaving? And you know, what's your eulogy for Jean Mota as an Inter Miami player?
I think he never got going after that injury that sidelined him for almost the entire season. So this is one of those moves that I was very happy to see, in the sense of it seemed like there was a bit of planning behind it. Obviously, our midfield is very, very, I don't want to say bloated, but it's well loaded. We've got some really good athletic youngsters who came in from the academy as well. So we've got David Ruiz, we've got, you know, Gressel's in there, we've got Gomez as well. I didn't see Mota getting too many minutes. So I think it's best for him and also best for the team to see him moved on, because it, as you said, it frees up a few of the finances, frees up a position, and we can maybe go in and get a more different, more versatile player that might be a better backup option than Jean Mota. So fair ends to him, man, and I hope he does well wherever he goes. But I think we have somebody in mind in terms of who you want to sign in, and it seems like a promising backup option that they're looking at. So we'll see.
Yeah, Jean Mota was signed before the 2022 season. He was sort of a locked-in starter that year. And then last season, he entered the season in a partnership with Gregory as sort of our Brazilian duo in the midfield. And I think Inter Miami fans became really comfortable with those two. But obviously, this is a different team with different expectations than where we were at a year ago. Last season, you know, overall, he played in 15 games, just over 1,000 minutes. No goals, 4 assists. This is a solid player, but he's not a player that's going to start on this team. He's not even a player that's going to be first off the bench on this team. And so for the salary he's making and for the cap charge that he has, I think it was pretty clear this was a move that Inter Miami wanted to make if they could. I think both of us thought at the beginning of the offseason that this was a player that likely wasn't going to be on the team this year. And I think probably both of us were surprised as December went and January went and even February went that he was still on the roster. He did play, come off the bench in 2 games so far this season. 24 minutes will be his final tally for Inter Miami this season. The one thing I wanted to talk about specifically with the Jean Mota news is I want to give credit to the academy and to the B team and to everyone in the Inter Miami organization, because the reason that this is possible is not because we brought in Diego Gomez or Julian Gressel or Sergio Busquets, but because our academy developed 3 midfielders that can fill that role on a homegrown contract, those being Kramaski, David Ruiz, and Lawson Sunderland. And so it's the development from the academy, from the B team, us bringing those young players through and getting them to the level where they can compete in the MLS and provide valuable minutes that allows us to get a highly paid veteran off the roster and to give us the roster flexibility and financial flexibility to go forward and make different moves. You mentioned it, that the midfield was a little bit bloated. We had a lot of midfielders that deserved minutes, and I think maybe we were a little thin in some of the other spots on the pitch. And so that brings us to Matias Rojas. He's been linked to Inter Miami over the last 24 hours. What are your initial thoughts when you heard this name, when you heard him connected to Inter Miami? What do you think of him as a player? Tell me about this guy.
Yeah, so when I heard about our connection to Matias Rojas and the fact that we were going in for him, I did a bit of research, and honestly, I wasn't able to find too much in terms of how he is as a player, because last season with Corinthians was basically a non-starter. He had, I believe, 3 assists in 30 games over the entirety of the 2022-2023 season. He had, I guess, two assists in 9 games for Corinthians. So wasn't much of an output in terms of offense. And going back even further for his career, I think he did much better when he was back in I forget which club he played for before that.
Racing Club in Argentina.
There you go, Racing Club. But yeah, I think his career in Argentina was a lot more dynamic, was a lot more promising compared to what happened at Corinthians. So a little bit of a up in the air sort of signing this, because I hope we get the Matias Rojas from Argentina rather than the one from Brazil. In terms of his profile, what I've heard, and again, this is just based on the preliminary research that I was able to do over the last couple of days, I think he's an attacking midfielder who has, who's, you know, more versatile, is a little bit quicker than John Mota, is a different profile altogether, plays the central position, but also is a left-footed right winger. So I think he offers something different to the team that we didn't essentially have since Facundo Farias got injured. I don't know if he's a likely like replacement for Farias, but it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. I don't see him as a starter. I see him more as a backup. And for a backup, I think it's a promising prospect. And I think this would be a good pickup for us going forward.
Yeah, just to give the basic profile on him, he's from Paraguay. He's 28 years old. He spent the last 6 or 7 months with Corinthians in Brazil. But before that, he had a multi-year stint at Racing Club in Argentina. And I think it's a lot more promising when you go back to his time at Racing Club than his time at Corinthians. We don't get the best view from Corinthians fans. They didn't seem to love his play. But if you go back further, it's a lot more promising. The first thing I thought when I saw this was that this is the guy that's going to replace Facundo Farias. We have talked about how maybe we're a little thin in, up front in the front three, especially with Farias gone, especially with Robbie Robinson having chronic hamstring issues. And so this move made sense to me right away as a guy that can be, kind of be a plug and play in that either wing spot. What I'll say, the more I looked into him, is it makes me a little confused because he seems to be a left foot dominant player that maybe isn't as versatile as I thought initially. Facundo Farias could have played on either the left or right without much of a problem. He's a, you know, a guy who can play on both sides comfortably. Rojas is much more left footed. I think he's going to shine in the channels. He's going to be a left winger that cuts in and sort of likes to play in those half spaces. But so with Lionel Messi on the team and with Lionel Messi in the starting lineup, I don't exactly know where he's going to fit in. I think he's an obvious replacement for Messi when Messi's not playing. But I get the sense that Chris Henderson and Tata Martino liked this player's profile, and then they saw that they might be able to get him for free because of his situation with Corinthians. And so they went ahead and made the move for a good player that they liked, more so than thinking that this was the perfect fit for this team.
Do you think he could fit into potentially the Grasso role in a 3-5-2? So have Redondo and Busquets as the holding midfielders, and then him as the attacking midfielder slash number 10 position. And then Gressel in the three at the back as a wing back. Do you think that might be something that they'd be looking at in terms of changing personnel in case it's needed? So if Gomez is not available for some reason, we might slot him in the number 10 position.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about us in a 3-5-2 very much, but...
it's happening, my friend. I know. It's happening tomorrow.
I know it is. I want to be honest. I have never watched this guy play a full game. I've only done research over the last 24 hours, so I don't really know if I like him in a midfield with those two. I don't want to like make any proclamations, but I think his profile probably could fit in that if needed. The thing I'll say about that is, though, I would rather have Kramaski or David Ruiz. I mean, to me, those two guys also signal as guys that would be good for that role. So I don't know if that's why we're bringing him in, but I guess we'll find out soon if Inter Miami signs him, and then I'll probably take a week or two before he gets his work permit and is ready to go. He's not going to be available for this Nashville game. So maybe we should just stick to talking about that for tonight. Just quickly, the availability report for Inter Miami: Federico Redondo is good to go. He got his work permit on Monday. He was seen training with the team all week. So he's had some training sessions with the team. He's fit. He played in the South American tournament, so he got a full preseason. I think he's ready to go. We also heard over the last 24 hours or so that Jordi Alba is questionable for tomorrow. He is apparently dealing with the flu or a cold or something. So it's unclear whether he's going to play or not. Tata Martino had some sly words today about if he's even in Nashville. And he said that we'd have to go check at Jordi Alba's house to see if he was there or on the trip. What do you think about these two guys being available and questionably available?
I think Redondo being available is a big, big deal. Having him available for the first CONCACAF game is definitely a good sign. I think he's just going to add a different dimension to our midfield. I think he's going to start, but I'm sure we're going to talk about the lineup soon. Alba being out, oof, that's a big one. Because I think what predictions I had for the starting 11 would change significantly if Alba's out. So I hope that he's able to pop in a few pills and play and get over that cold and, you know, jump on the plane to Nashville, but we'll see.
Do you think Jordi Alba being out changes the formation or play style at all, or just sort of the quality?
I think with Yedlin out, it changes the formation.
Agreed.
Because then we don't have both of our starting wing backs or, you know, both of our starting right back, left back. In terms of a like for like replacement for Alba, I think Alan's a decent enough replacement. I think he would do a good job in that position. Obviously, you can't compare him entirely to Alba. They're slightly different players, but I think he would do a job for one game for sure. And I wouldn't see him as a, you know, a player that would, I wouldn't be nervous if I saw him on the team sheet. But yeah, with both Yedlin and him out, it's up in the air now because we don't know what we're going to play. So,
all right, let's go to Nashville. They have two key injuries that they've been dealing with since the first game of their season, which was the first game of their CONCACAF Champions Cup run. They played Moca FC in the last round, and while they were in the Dominican Republic, they did win 3-0, but they lost both Hani Mukhtar and Sam Surridge. Surridge is their DP striker. He's a guy that they thought it was going to come in last summer and make a huge impact, and there were some pretty high hopes about what he would do this year. Then obviously Hani Mukhtar, former MLS MVP, is one of the best players in the league. Surridge is out. Gary Smith talked to the media over the last couple of days and said that Surridge is out, and I do think that's going to be a long-term injury where he's not going to be available next week either. Hani Mukhtar, though, when he first got injured, they talked about how it was a precaution, how he probably could have stayed in if the score line wasn't 2-0 already. And yet he hasn't played in the first two MLS games. He didn't play last week against Moca. He's questionable for tomorrow night. How big of a difference does it make if these two players don't play for Nashville?
I'll just put it this way. If these two players don't play, it's good for Miami, not great for Nashville. I think this is a team that relies on their defense. Obviously, this is a team that is defensively very strong, sits back in a low block, and they rely on these two players for all their transition and offensive work. So if Hani Mukhtar is out, they basically have nobody to take the ball up the field and have an offensive threat as such. Now, I don't want to jinx Miami by saying that they don't have an offensive threat, but let's be honest, Hani Mukhtar has been their standout offensive player, and he would have been a game changer that I would have, you know, kept my eye on from the Nashville team. So if he doesn't play, I think it's going to be a very long evening for Nashville.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we'll go over that a little bit more once we talk about how we think the game's going to go. Let's talk about last year. Inter Miami and Nashville played each other four times, two at Geodis Park, two at Drive Pink. Inter Miami 1-1, Nashville 1-1, and then they had two draws, including the Leagues Cup final where Inter Miami won the final after penalties. This is a team that Inter Miami's comfortable with. It's a team that even Messi and Busquets and company are familiar with and have some, you know, chippiness towards. They understand what this team is like, having already played them twice in important games. How do you feel about this sort of matchup between these two teams? And I'll go over what happened in those four games in a minute, but this is a team that we've seen a lot.
Yeah, it's almost as though this is a mini rivalry of sorts picking up. You know, I think Nashville, Miami, we've met each other quite a few times over the last couple of seasons. So it feels like this might develop into something of a ad hoc rivalry of sorts. And honestly, it seems to be a matchup of two different styles of football. This is a pure defense versus offense match. It's the Messi offense versus the Zimmerman defense. So it's going to be two antithetical styles of football. It's going to be interesting to see. I do think Messi and Busquets and co enjoy playing against Nashville because it offers a very different sort of a puzzle where they have to unlock the defense and, you know, interplay with one another and really use their skills to play against a low block, which can be fun at times if you're the offensive minded team. So I think they enjoy playing against Nashville. Nashville will have a chip on their shoulder because they really put a lot of impetus on their League's Cup run. And that loss to Inter Miami really hurt them in the MLS as well, because I think they were doing really well for the first half of the season. After the League's Cup, they went on a 1-6 run with six losses. And they were initially at the second or the third position and then ended up in the seventh position, which wasn't great. They still made the playoffs, but I think it really put a dent in their MLS Cup hopes. So they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. They're going to want to prove something. But I think, again, they're not going to change their play style in any way. So it's going to be a fun game to watch. Yeah, it's going to be a frustrating fun game to watch.
let's rewind the clock to last season. Inter Miami first played Nashville at Geodis Park on May 17th. It was a really bad game from Inter Miami. They really couldn't get a lot of opportunities. They ended up losing the game 2-1, but that included a Dixon Arroyo goal in stoppage time that made the scoreline more respectable. This was sort of peak Phil Neville ball, and sort of this was the run of games that really cost him his job. Then they played him again a week later, and this was in the U.S. Open Cup. This was at Dry Pink Stadium, for those that remember. This was when we had the lightning delay in the second half. Nicholas Stefanelli scored Inter Miami's second goal, and Inter Miami sort of snuck away with that game while Nashville was resting some of its star players. And that was sort of key to their long run in the Open Cup. And then their next matchup was sort of once Messi got to Miami and once this was a new look Miami with Tata Martino, with the Barcelona boys. And they met in the League's Cup final. As you mentioned, Nashville kind of struggled after the League's Cup, and they really struggled before the League's Cup. That was sort of a fun run for them in between a poor run of form on both sides in MLS play. But in that final, Messi gets a nice goal from just outside the box. It was, in my opinion, his best goal for Inter Miami last season in terms of just individual difficulty. And then Drake Callender had both the penalty-winning shot and the penalty-winning save in extra time. So that was a fun moment. It was Inter Miami's first ever trophy. And then they met about 10 days later on the 30th of August. And this was the first game that made Miami look vulnerable once Messi got to the team. Inter Miami had won every single game. They had won in comeback fashion. They had won in dominating fashion. They had won close games. They had won in penalties. They had won blowouts. They had won because the other team gave them free headers. I mean, it looked like this was Messi magic at its peak, where everything just happened to go Miami's way until this game. Inter Miami needed to rack up points if they were going to make the playoffs that season. And Nashville came into Miami, or into Fort Lauderdale, and they hunkered down and they kept Inter Miami to a 0-0 draw. And Miami only got 1 point out of that game. And that was sort of the beginning of the downfall for Inter Miami's playoff chances last season. A bunch of close games, some really fun ones, some really tight ones, some snoozers. What does that tell you about how this game is going to go tomorrow night?
This is, I think, because it's a two-legged tie and this is away from home, I do think this is going to be one of the frustrating games. I think I earlier said it's going to be a frustrating fun game. Now that I think about it, I think the second leg of the tie is going to be more fun. the first leg might actually be a snooze fest. So I don't, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends in a 0-0 or a 1-1.
For those that aren't aware, in CONCACAF Champions Cup, away game goals do count. And so I'm sure that the 0-0 draw from the last time these two teams played each other is sort of an ideal outcome for Nashville in this game. Let's talk about some of the players on Nashville that you have your eye on. We talked about Sam Surge being out. Hany Mukhtar is questionable. Who are some of the players that you think are impact players for Nashville?
Again, and I don't want to keep hammering this point, but I think Nashville obviously depends on their defense a lot more. And it's the back four that is very impressive. They've got a very good defensive record. They conceded, I believe, 32 goals all of last season and had a score difference of 7, which was great. And I think they rely a lot on the partnership of Zimmerman and McNaughton. And they've got some really pacey wing backs as well in Shakmu and Lovitz. But I think the key to that defense is Zimmerman, who sort of organizes that back line, keeps them in check, and is basically the leader of that back line. And he's obviously going to be key. But when I was doing a little bit of research in Nashville and how they might line up, it's been interesting because a lot of their fans have talked about how they might be playing a diamond formation with a singular pivot. But then they've got two holding midfielders in Godoy and Davis, who are very similar to one another in terms of how they play. Sorry, I'm just looking at some of my notes, and it's like Godoy is the late runner into the box, the long shot attempt person, whereas Davis does everything really well, a little bit of everything here and there, but is not exceptional at everything. So I feel like they've got two decent midfielders, but not exceptionally standout midfielders. And I think that's where our midfielders will be able to take advantage.
I will say, after your analysis of Orlando City's midfield, I don't know if I can trust your takes.
My analysis of Orlando City's midfield is going to be proven correct in the coming games, okay? That was an anomaly. I still think Orlando City is a good team, but hey, the fact that Inter Miami showed up with all guns blazing was not my fault. I still think my analysis was correct. But again, to actually come back to my point, I don't think their midfield is as potent as anything that we've dealt with up until this point. I think the defense is going to be key. We're going to have to obviously lock down Shaq Moore. We're going to have to lock down Lovitz. And we're going to have to prevent those balls into the box. I was going to say that Sam Surridge would be the one to look out for in terms of balls being put into the box and, prevent the headers. But since he's not there, they don't have much of an attacking threat. And then you've got the wingers in Tyler Boyd, who's their new acquisition, and then Jacob Schaffelberg, who are relatively quick, speedy wingers, but they don't have much of an offensive output when Hany Mukhtar and Sam Surridge aren't in the team. So I feel like Nashville will rely even more so on their defense, given the absence of their players, try to get past this particular tie, and then take it to Chase Stadium to try and salvage something out of this tie. And maybe even, come out with a snatch victory. But for this particular game, with the players that are unavailable to them, I think they're going to rely heavily on their defense.
I want to talk about their two wingers, Tyler Boyd and Jacob Schaffelberg. The thing that scares me about this Inter Miami team is turnovers in the midfield and then quick transitions with speedy wingers. And so, even though Nashville was a pretty bad team offensively last season, they had two really speedy wingers in Schaffelberg and Fafa Picaud, who scared me, especially with our back line, especially with what I think we're expecting from our back line in this game. Fafa Picaud's out. He was a speedster. They brought in Tyler Boyd from the Galaxy. I think he's probably a better overall winger, more well-rounded, and probably has a little more offensive output. But I
He's
don't
very technical
think,
as well.
Yeah, he's a more technical player than a pacey player. And I actually think that plays in Inter Miami's hands, where we don't have to worry about getting beaten transition from him. Jacob Schaffelberg is the big threat, in my opinion, in this game. I remember his goal in the Gold Cup last year for Canada against the USMNT, where he just takes it down the sideline and beats the defense with just pure pace, and then just fires it past the keeper. He's not actually tremendous at converting opportunities into goals, but that particular goal has always stuck with me as something very dangerous from him. And, you know, if we have, not our most athletic back line playing, and maybe we're playing in a new formation that we're not the most comfortable with, I'm a little worried about that. But in general, without Hani Mukhtar, I think they're going to struggle. And so to me, Schaffelberg is like the key player for them if they are going to score. Yeah, go ahead.
I've got one word for you. Diego Gomez. Just put him on it. Man mark the shit out of Jacob Schaffelberg and we'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm worried about transition where we don't have the opportunity to set up.
Well, I've got another word for you.
Go ahead.
Redondo. That's where he comes in. So it'll be interesting. I think it's going to be a lot of new pieces that we're going to see from Miami. And it'll be interesting to see how they tackle this particular puzzle, because up until this point, we've seen teams that have taken the game to Miami, and this is going to be a completely different test. So I'm excited for how Tata decides to resolve this particular puzzle.
Yeah, there's one other player I want to put on people's minds. His name is Forster Ajago. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it. He's a new player just out of college for Nashville. He went to Duke, and he scored 2 goals in their last game against Mocha. He's actually not even eligible or registered for MLS play, so he hasn't played in the MLS yet because Nashville doesn't have an international roster slot for him. But he is eligible for this tie, and he might start this game. He's a striker. He's a guy that Nashville fans were really excited about after his first performance against Mocha, and they thought he was probably an upgrade on Bunbury. So a name to keep in mind that if he is talented, we haven't seen him a lot. There's not a lot of film on him, but he's a guy that Nashville fans were at least excited about after the first game. But I guess the big thing is whether Hani Mukhtar is going to play or not. He's one of the best players in MLS. And so it feels like it's really difficult to talk about how this game is going to go without knowing if he's going to play. Let's entertain me for a minute and just assume he is going to play and that they've been saving him for this game. What impact does that have on this game, in your opinion?
I was going to ask you a very similar question, whether having Hani Mukhtar is actually good for Miami or is it bad for Miami? I think obviously he's going to be a threat regardless of whether Nashville has offensive players around him. I think he's one of those players who can easily pick a moment during a game and then make something out of it. So as you said, he's a fantastic player. I believe he had some 15 goals and 9 assists all of last season, which is a great contribution in this Nashville team. And I think if he plays, they're definitely going to have a threat on the counter, and they're definitely going to be threatening in the transition. We can't have Busquets losing the ball like he did against RSL with Hani Mukhtar having that sort of an impact. So I think it's going to be something that's going to keep the backline really busy if he is in the starting 11. And it'll be a good test for someone like a Nicolas Freire, who doesn't have as many minutes in his leg, if he starts. And with Yedlin out, with Alba potentially out, I'm slightly worried for this backline, because we're definitely going to see a new look backline. And for the last 3 games, the defense has been looking really good and been very consistent for Miami. So this game, where we're going to see a bit of a new back four, it's going to be interesting how they deal with a potent attacking threat like Mukhtar.
Okay, let's talk about Miami, because we spent a little bit of time talking about Nashville, but this is an Inter Miami team that's sort of in transition now that they've moved on from DeAndre Yedlin. I think they're going to play with 3-5-2. I think that in the preseason, at least when we saw the 3-5-2, they were leaking goals. It did not look good. They didn't feel like they were sound defensively. They didn't feel organized. The players didn't feel comfortable playing in a back three. where are you with this Miami team? I mean, they had a good start to the year. They went on the road and got a decent point against the Galaxy. They had two home wins by a combined 7-0. But it feels like all of that might be throw out the window because they might be changing everything for this game. I mean, where are you right now with this Miami team?
As I said to you before we started this podcast, I'm very confused for this particular game, not just because of Miami, but also because of Nashville. And I don't want to dwell too much on Nashville, and I know we want to talk about Miami, but just to, if you give me a minute, I think Nashville over the last couple of games has tried, I think, three different formations. They played 4-2-2-2, they played 4-3-3, they played three at the back. So they've been trying a few things here and there, and we don't really know what they're going to come out with. So that's a dilemma in itself, I think, of how you want to set up your team, whether you want to set up your team based on how the other team shows up, or you want to go with, you know, your consistent formation and then not worry about what the other team is doing as such and then make tactical changes in the game. So that's one issue that I have with this game. And then focusing more on the Miami side of things, before we heard about the Alba injury, I would have gone with the 3-5-2 as well. But if Alba's out, then that means the three players in the back line would essentially be Aviles, Freire, Christov, Allen in Alba's position, and then perhaps someone like Aggresso in the right back position, perhaps right wing back position. That means we have no defensive cover on the bench or no starting defensive cover on the bench. If any of them gets injured, we're screwed. So that's sort of messed up my understanding of what formation Tata would play. My initial thinking was a 3-5-2 as well, but now I'm a little bit confused. So tell me your thoughts on this.
The one thing I'll say is I do think Robert Taylor can play that left wing back spot instead of Jordi Alba as well. Although my prediction would be that it would be no Allen. But if they needed to make a change later in the game, they could probably shift Allen to center back and then have Robert Taylor as the left wing back. I agree with you, man. I'm confused too, because they were getting into good form at an important part of the season, and they felt they had to make these two moves. And I think they've been trying to make these two moves for the entire offseason just to set themselves up for the rest of this year and for the summer window. But it's weird in the middle of the season to have important games coming up. And this Nashville game is a very important game, and to be in flux like this and not really know what's happening. Do you feel like they're going to be able to handle it? I mean, do you trust Tata? Do you trust Messi and co to make the adjustments? Do you trust the back line to figure it out with, you know, this week of practice?
I think with what I've seen over the last 3-4 games, this team has shown that it will show up when it matters. Even when we had our backs against the wall, we only lost, we haven't lost a game. The Galaxy game feels like a loss, but it was only 1-1 at our worst that we played against a very good Galaxy team. So I do think that this team has the capability to make the changes on the go and come up with the moments when it needs to. I think it might make for a painful watch tomorrow, but I do think we'll be able to come up with the goods in case we're put under pressure. The second good thing about it is that if all goes to hell tomorrow, we'll have another try at Chase Stadium, and I expect Miami to at least finish the job then. So this might be actually a good game for us to have a certain amount of uncertainty, because we might get a redo in the next game against Nashville. But yeah, it feels like every time all the pieces are falling together, something, you know, comes apart for this team. I think the defense was doing really well, but we were trying to figure out what the midfield situation is going to be. Now that we know Redondo's coming into the midfield, we feel like that's going to sort itself out. The back line is now something that's being questioned. So it feels like there's always one question or another about this team composition. But I trust Tata and Chris Henderson to have some sort of a plan in mind. And I think give it another month and we'll see what the team composition would look like. And I think we'll be happy with it.
Well, unfortunately for this tournament, we don't have another month to get comfortable with it. We have, you know, 30 minutes to test things out to make sure that everything's working, because this is, you know, it's a do or die game. I know we have a second leg, but you can lose a two-legged tie in the first game. Let's go to lineup predictions, and maybe I should start. I agree with you. I think we're going to get a 3-5-2. I don't think this team has anyone that's going to play as a right back in a traditional right back in a 4-3-3. So with that said, I think Drake Callender in goal, obviously. I think our back three would be the three center backs we've seen start so far this year, with Toto Aviles as the right center back, Sergei Kristoff in the middle, and then Nico Freire as our left center back. I'm going to go ahead and say Jordi Alba does start and make it easy on myself, because it gets a lot more complicated if I don't. And then Julian Gressel on the right wing back spot. In the midfield, I do think Redondo is going to start. I think that we're going to see Busquets and Diego Gomez, and I think we're going to see Suarez and Messi up top, which does mean Robert Taylor is going to the bench. And before I go to you, I just want to explain why I think Redondo is going to get the start. When I was thinking about putting him in the starting lineup or not, I remember Tata Martino did this twice last season, and it really stuck with me. In his first game at Inter Miami, he threw Lawson Sunderland in to start. It was his first ever game with the first team, and he just threw him in, gave him a half to try and figure it out, and then saw what happened and sort of went from there. And then he did the same thing with Jean Mota in the U.S. Open Cup semifinal, where he just sort of threw him out there in the first half and just let him go for a half and just kind of just to see where he's at and just to let him ride. And I know that first game, I believe it was against D.C., was just a regular MLS game, but the U.S. Open Cup semifinal was a big game with consequences, and that did not stop Tata Martino from just throwing out Jean Mota and seeing if he had it that night. And he didn't, and it didn't matter, because Tata took him off at halftime. The team recovered in the second half, and they won the game. So that's why, even though we haven't seen Redondo yet, even though Tata Martino hasn't had a lot of time to work with Redondo yet, I think he's just going to throw him out there and let him swim and make adjustments at halftime if needed. And he has some guys on the bench to do so. With that said, let me hear your starting 11.
For the sake of being different from you and not repeating exactly what you said, I'm going to go with a slightly controversial one. And this might, again, you might come back in the next podcast and criticize my ball knowledge, but I'm going to go with a traditional 4-3-3. Okay. Even though I know Gressel's never played in that right back position, I think just for this game, because we don't have cover in that position, we're going to have Callender in goal. Aviles and Freire are going to start. And then we've got Allen and Gressel as our fullback options. Then in midfield, I agree with you. I think Redondo was not bought to sit on the bench. I think he's going to start. I think Tata Martino isn't afraid to give a player the chance to show his abilities, even when, you know, the situation demands high results. So I think he's going to see if Redondo can sink or swim in that situation. And I think he's going to do well. So I think Redondo, Busquets, and Gomez would be a good combination in the middle of the park. And then we're going to go with the front three of Messi, Suarez, and Robert Taylor. And I do want to caveat by saying that this might be a game where we see Campana instead of Suarez, just if Tata Martino wants to do a little bit of rotation. I know Tata's never been the one who enjoys rotation, but I think it might be a good chance to rest Suarez and play him against Nashville in the return leg.
I don't think we're going to see any rotation there. I think we might see some rotation this weekend against Montreal, but I think this is like, this tournament is the tournament that's sort of make or break for the first half of the season, where if they don't do serious damage in this tournament, it's going to be looked at as a failure, and winning MLS Cup is probably the only way they're going to make up for that. That's your lineup. My only comment is it does scare me having Jacob Schaffelberg and, you know, going up against Julian Gressel defensively. That's a matchup that would definitely concern me. That would be my sort of circle on the team sheet as something that I'm worried about.
But also, we don't know what role Tata wants Redondo to play here, whether he wants him to be the more defensive, because he can cover more ground than Sergio Busquets. So We might even see Busquets going a little bit further up, and then Redondo being more of a sweeper, sort of a midfielder who covers Gressel when needed or covers Allen when needed. So I think, again, I know for a fact that Gressel is not comfortable in a right back position, but and I may have shot myself in the foot by going with a 4-3-3, but I wanted to offer something different. I wanted to offer something unique. And you know what? If it comes up, then I'm gonna be the one who's gonna be laughing at the end of the day. So we'll see.
Can I ask you a question? This Nashville team is not a team that we're expecting a lot from in possession. Do you think there's any chance we see Noah Allen as a right back in a traditional back four? I mean, he's very left-footed, but if the biggest concern defensively is someone that is athletic enough to keep up with Jakob Schaffelberg in transition, that feels like something Noah Allen could probably do.
And then,
I wouldn't normally say that because I don't think that he's going to fit well as a right back, but if his sole job is to sort of track that speedy winger on one side of the pitch, I don't know. What do you think?
this is assuming the Arbus bit, right?
Yes. Because I think you would need Alba's offense because you wouldn't have much from
I
that
wouldn't be
side.
opposed to that actually.
I
I
don't
would
think that's going to happen.
actually,
I
yeah,
don't
but
think it's
I
going to
wouldn't be
happen, but
opposed to
just
that.
spitballing.
That's actually a good thought because I think against this Nashville team, you can get away with being a little bit cynical in defense. I think if Allen can just do the simple job of ensuring that they can't get past in transitions and don't have the counterattack, which I think he has the legs in him, he's young, he can keep up with Schaffelberg. If he can do that particular job, I think that just solves the problems that we have for this particular game. And I think that would be a good solution. I would then put Gressel in midfield and maybe take Gomez out. I do think that could work.
There's one other thing I want to mention, and I definitely should have mentioned it towards the beginning of the podcast, but Jannik Breit, who Inter Miami still hasn't signed, but he was their first pick in the draft, is another guy that I think a lot of people profiled as a right back when we first drafted him. And so, not for tomorrow night's game, but for when he does get signed to a first team contract, he seems like a guy that might be able to fill that role. I'm just sort of putting that out there because I should have mentioned it earlier. Okay, so we've both put out our lineup predictions. With those in mind, how is this game going to go?
I think I've already mentioned this, and I may have contradicted myself a couple of times already in this podcast, but I think it's going to be a frustrating game. We're going to start off seeing Nashville fighting for their life, staying in a low block, preventing anything that Messi and Miami have to offer. And it's going to be a really hard time trying to unlock that defense. I don't think we're going to see a high line like we did against, or like we saw with in the previous game. Where Miami had the opportunity to use Orlando's high line and exploit that really well. So I think this is going to be a completely different game compared to that, where Nashville's going to sit back. We're not going to see runners in behind, and we're going to have to unlock that defense with cute passes, one touch passes, a lot of give and go. And that's going to be the key. I think the first half is going to be Inter Miami trying to figure out where the holes are in the Nashville defense, and it's going to end 0-0. I think towards the 60th minute is when we're going to start seeing a lot of Inter Miami's offense starting to click. And I think we're going to score the first goal once Campana comes on. It's going to be a ball in the box by Gressel and a header by Campana, and that's going to make it 1-0. And that's where we're going to finish this game. 1-0, 60th minute goal. Being frustrated all night, but we're gonna come out with a win.
I love the specificity on that prediction. It's good. I agree with you that if things go as maybe you would expect them to go, it's going to be a very frustrating game. I think Nashville's goal, especially if Hany Mukhtar does not play, is going to be get out of this game with a 0-0 draw, give Hany Mukhtar another week before the second leg, and then from there, all you have to get is a one goal draw. Where, a 1-1 game in the return leg in Miami would be enough to see Nashville go through. Nashville's going to be very organized defensively. Their back four is going to be tight. They're going to be, They're going to have great communication. They're going to be very organized. They're not going to be giving a lot of space for Inter Miami up the middle. And I think that's where Inter Miami struggles the most, is when they can't spread the opposing defensive line out. And they play, when the opposing defense plays very tight, they give very little space in sort of that central part of the pitch. That's where Messi struggles the most. And that's also where Alba struggles the most, because Alba can get wide and get open wide, but then he doesn't have outlets in the box to get the ball to. So that's what they did last year. I think that game against that game in the MLS regular season, the second game in late August, it was a 0-0 draw at Drive Pink. I think that is the blueprint for this game and how I think it's going to go. And it's just a matter of if Miami can break through, you know, can Suarez be the difference? Can his tactical acumen, can his game awareness unlock that, you know, that organization? Or can Nashville, you know, withstand with Walker Zimmerman back there? And maybe can they get a goal on the counterattack? But really, it's going to be 75% possession for Miami and very frustrating game. What's your final prediction?
Final prediction is
1-0. Official final prediction, 1-0.
1-0, 60th minute goal.
Campana goal.
Yeah. I don't think Nashville has been great in the MLS up until this point. The three games that they've played, they haven't looked fantastic. Against Red Bull, they should probably have lost that game. Somehow managed to sneak out a point. I'll be very frustrated if this turns out to be a smash and grab where they score one in the 89th minute and nick a victory. Because, yeah, that's the worst way to lose a game against a side that defends the entire 90 minutes. So I do think there's going to be a lot of issues for Inter Miami. And we do have the right tools to unlock that defense. But it's going to take some time. And it's going to take a lot of prodding and poking to try and figure out where the vulnerabilities are in that defense. But we're going to do it.
Here's my official prediction. I think that there's a very good chance that this is a 0-0 game for a long portion of the game, and that Inter Miami is very frustrated that they're creating half chances, but nothing good enough to actually put in the back of the net, and that it remains 0-0 for a frustrating amount of time. But my prediction is that we're going to score in the first 10 minutes. That's going to completely change the game. Inter Miami is going to score a second before halftime. They're going to go out into half 2-0, and they're going to win the game 2-0. And while everything we just said is going to play out how we expect, I think Inter Miami is going to take one of those half chances early on. And I think they're going to nick a second one later on in the first half. They're going to sort of force Nashville to really get uncomfortable. I think that early goal might just come, and, you know, luck or, you know, saving grace, I don't know. But I do think we're going to get that early goal. I think it's going to change the entire outlook of the entire tie. Inter Miami wins 2-0 on the road, and then next week becomes a lot more comfortable.
I feel like we've gone through a lot of contradictions between the two of us this podcast. So it's going to make a very interesting preview. It's going to make a very interesting post-game review when we have that. We'll see who turns out to be right in this case.
Yeah, well, we try hard not to talk to each other about our thoughts before the podcast, just so everything is sort of fresh and unexpected from each other's viewpoint. One last thing I want to ask about before we get off the pod is, we've seen a lot of these CONCACAF Champions Cup midweek games be sparsely attended, even in the MLS. Just tonight, New England played Alajuelense, and Gillette Stadium looked very empty. I know it was 6 o'clock, and I know there's factors to it, but, you know, MLS games are, especially messy games, are generally very, you know, they're booked. Do you think we're going to see a full house tomorrow night, or are you expecting it to be kind of a dull atmosphere?
Simply put, no Messi, no party. And we have Messi, so there's going to be a party. I think it's going to be a full house. Everyone wants to take the opportunity to come watch Messi, whether it's Nashville fans, whether it's Inter Miami fans, whether it's neutral fans as well. So I think there's definitely going to be a full house because you want to take the opportunity to watch Messi while you can. And that's the biggest draw that Inter Miami have at this moment.
Do you think it's going to be like an Inter Miami crowd? Because
I would be surprised.
The reason I ask this is because these CONCACAF Champions Cup games are generally not included in season ticket packages. And so the regular season ticket holders don't fill the stadium like they would in a normal MLS game. And so I'm just curious.
I think there's going to be a lot of pink shirts floating around in the stadium.
Probably a lot of blue and white shirts too. Mm-hmm. Okay, last question before we go. Who is the man of the match when we're done with this game?
Oof, that's a tough one because I don't want to say the cop-out answer and call it Messi. I'm going to say Campana for a 60th minute header. Okay. I'm really digging in deep into that one.
No, dude, I get it. I'm going to go with Luis Suarez. I just think he's going to be the person that unlocks this defense, and maybe he gets an assist on that first 7th minute goal.
I think it has to be a offensive player because, that's just how the game is going to play out, or at least that's what we think the way the game's going to play out. And it has to be an offensive player who makes the difference for either sides. So I do think it's going to be one of the front three.
All right, everyone. This was episode 8 of the Drive Pink Dialogue. It was a blast for Soar. My name is Scotty. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you after the game. Everyone have a great, great game.